Hello, and welcome to the podcast portion of Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, your source for news, previews, reviews, and interviews with baseball authors, artists, filmmakers, musicians, anyone who has anything to do with baseball and pop culture. Because that's our slogan, if it fits on a bookshelf, it fits here. You can pretty much count on a new book or two about the Mets every year, but 2016 sees a bonanza of titles covering not only the team's success in 2015, but the 30th anniversary of the World Championship team of 1986. One of the later books comes from Eric Sherman, who worked with Mookie Wilson on his memoirs last year, as well as projects from Steve Bless and Glenn Burke. Sherman's latest, The Kings of Queens, Life Beyond Baseball with the 86 Mets, catches up with some of the most famous, and not so famous, members of that iconic team that was both a joy for what they accomplished and a disappointment in that they couldn't build on it. I spoke with Sherman about the challenges in producing such a book.
Eric Sherman, welcome to the Baseball Bookshelf.
Well, thank you, Ron. Great to be here.
Well, congratulations on your latest book, King of Queens, Life Beyond Baseball with the 86 Mets, the apostrophes in there. I want to be accurate with that. So, How did this book come about? I mean, obviously, it's the 30th anniversary of that special season, and there are a number of Mets books coming out. But why did this book come out at this time?
Well, I think it was mostly based on the success of the last book that I did. I was co-author of Mookie, Life, Baseball, and the 86 Mets. And that book made the New York Times bestseller list for sports hardcovers. And when I would attend the book signings with Mookie, we did about 8 of them, and we would have about 400 to 600 people attend each book signing. So even though it had been 28 years, a couple of years ago, since that 86 championship season, I got the sense that there was still this insatiable need for Mets fans to look back at 86. However, I realized, like you just said, there are lots of books about the 86 Mets, not just this year, but in years past, that I needed an angle. So I thought long and hard about it. Rosa Wilson, Mookie's wife, had said, you know, I'd love to hear about what the former players are doing today. So I thought an angle, much like the one that the great Roger Kahn did with the Brooklyn Dodgers and the Boys of Summer, would be good, where I would go out and visit the key and more riveting players from that 86 team. And by other riveting players, some of the role players like Kevin Mitchell, Ed Hearn, Danny Heap, Rafael Santana, guys that you know you haven't heard as much about in the papers like you would a Lenny Dykstra, Doc Gooden, or Daryl Strawberry. And as you know, Ron, a lot of these 86 Mets have had tremendous off-the-field challenges as well as on. So it was a very good team, I think, to take another look at to find out not just what they're doing, but also how are they doing.
Now, it's interesting you mentioned Kahn because his book came out in the mid-70s, so the readers of that book were middle-aged, as are the readers of this book now, because we were, if you were just starting out to be a Met fan, you were like, let's say, 10 or older, that you can still remember everything.
Yep.
People like me, who are substantially older than that, are now the same age as a lot of these players. And it's a little disconcerting for again someone like me to look back because you always see the videos of the players as they work, playing the game. I was just watching the fight between Eric Davis of the Reds and Ray Knight on a play at third base. You always see them frozen in their youth, and now to see them in the book, that was a wake up call to me to see, especially the picture of Lenny Dykstra in your book.
Well,
Lenny is now, and yes, a lot of these people have had difficult lives. Ed Hearn has had health issues, and Dykstra's had his financial setbacks, things like that. So it's I don't know if it's welcome because it serves as a reminder that we're all getting on, but it is a tribute to these guys who, as you say, they were not, with a few exceptions like Daryl and Doc and Keith. These are not the frontline players for the most part.
Well, I tried to visit all the starters. So I did a pretty good job of that. You know, the one exception, I was asked, Ron, if there was one player that I would have liked to have profiled and would have liked to have met to conduct an interview, and I didn't. There are 14 chapters in the book, so 14 different players. The one I would have liked to have met with would have been Ray Knight. But despite many attempts, I wasn't able to set anything up. And I was told that's primarily because Ray Knight left the Mets on pretty bad terms. And, he was the World Series MVP. He was really a major clubhouse leader and on the field enforcer, like you just alluded to with that brawl. You know, the Mets got into four brawls that year, and Ray Knight was in the middle of all of them. He's a Golden Gloves boxer, too. The main guys, fittingly for this book, have had to overcome quite a bit off the field in general. I mean, there have been a couple of exceptions maybe, but if you go around position by position, a lot of those guys have had to deal with, with health problems, with financial problems, problems with drugs and alcohol. So it makes for an interesting read to find out how these guys are doing today. It's kind of ironic. As you know, it was a hard-partying team. It was part of the allure of that team, kind of like part of their rock star status. You know, not only were they a very talented team, but they also really enjoyed themselves off of it. And, you know, I interviewed Gary Carter's widow, Sandy, to get her perspective of Gary's Mets years. And, Gary's the only member of that 86 team that's no longer with us. And, I mean, if you had gone to Vegas and made a wager and got odds on who would be the first one to go, Gary Carter would be the 24th man. You know, there's 24-man rosters then, not 25. He would have been the 24th. Right there with Mookie, probably, because he was such a family man, a man of faith, didn't go to the strip clubs and, didn't party like those other guys. Yet he was the first to go, and sadly, brain cancer.
Now, you mentioned your first book about Mookie. Did you think that it had anything to do with your access to the other players?
This book, Kings of Queens, I don't think it would have been possible unless I did the book with Mookie. Now, this is my fourth book. So I did two others. I did one with Glenn Burke, and I did one with Steve Blass. But Kings of Queens would not have happened without the Mookie book in two respects. One, I got to meet guys like Keith Hernandez, who wrote the foreword in Mookie's book, Ron Darling, Bobby Ojeda. Mookie and I have become very good friends. And he's introduced me to other members of the 86 team before I even started this book project. And so the ones he didn't introduce me to, I contacted them on my own through various avenues. And I think that once they realized that I did write by Mookie, that I told his, or I helped Mookie tell his story in a very truthful way, that if I was good enough to work with Mookie, I was good enough for them to at least talk to me. And all I asked for was 45 minutes from all these guys. Even though I would travel long distances to see them. I only asked for 45 minutes, and the average interview went 4 hours, with two of them going 7 hours. So they really opened up to me, and I think the reader will see how deep these guys went, deeper than they have before, and I think the reader will also get a sense that as they're reading it, it'll be like they're right there with us. You know, they'll be right in Dwight Gooden's dining room with us. They'll be right in that bar I was in with Doug Sisk. So I think that's another part of the book that's very different from all the others that have been written about that 86 Mets team. It's very, very personal.
You say you ask for 45 minutes. I think that's a good psychological angle. It's like selling something for $9.99. It's not $10. I'm not asking for an hour. I'm asking for 45 minutes. Oh, that's much better. Sure, I need 45 minutes.
And they'll always give you more if they're enjoying it. And I think, you know, I mean, this is a pretty loquacious group. You know, they were always outspoken, every last one of them. they're a very opinionated group, and I think that's the beauty of it, and that was another reason why I wanted to pursue this project, because I had a feeling that I was going to get some pretty good answers, and I did.
Did you basically ask everyone the same kinds of questions, or did you really tailor them to this subject? Because I've seen books before, oral histories before, where you can practically check off the list that this is the same question I asked this guy and this guy and this guy and this guy. So I'm just wondering about your process.
No, I tailored it to each one of these guys because their stories are so different. You know, these guys come from different parts of the country. They have different backgrounds. They're doing very, very different things from one another. They've had different trials and tribulations. I definitely tailored it to each of their stories. Like an Ed Hearn story, where he's had three kidney transplants and bouts with cancer. I mean, he's just lived the life of Job. I mean, that's a very different story than that of a Danny Heap, who's really been under the radar, yet he's one of the most successful college baseball coaches in the country. So the stories are very, very different.
About how many would you say are, you mentioned Heap's a college coach? Backman, is Backman still a minor league manager?
Yeah.
How many of those guys have stayed in the game in some way?
I think you just named them. Well, Mookie is an instructor. He's a roving instructor as well as the Mets team ambassador. Keith Hernandez, is, of course, a broadcaster. Rafael Santana works in scouting the Dominican Republic for the White Sox. Howard Johnson is a hitting coach. I believe it's now the Texas Rangers organization. When I met with him, he was the Mariners' big league hitting coach. He's no longer with them. But as far as managing, you have Wally Backman at the AAA level. He's been at that level seemingly forever. I mean, he has 6 first place finishes, two minor league manager of the year awards. I argue that he may very well be the greatest minor league manager to have never managed in the major leagues. And of course, you know, I think he's still getting held back by alleged domestic issues that he had more than 15 years ago.
You mentioned your other two books with Glenn Burke and Steve Blass. Now, both of those guys had to deal with issues of one sort or another. How did you come about those projects?
Well, I have a niche. I like to work with other baseball players on their autobiographies or in this case, the 86 Mets, you know, baseball stories that transcend the sport. So I'm not really interested in a Derek Jeter type of book. It's just because I think Jeter's, you know, like a bad day for Jeter, I think, is if he trips over some supermodel's pumps on the way to the kitchen. You know, like, that's a bad day for Jeter. I mean, all kidding aside, you know, I'm sure Jeter had his challenges, and you know, like everybody else, you know, we all have problems. But I just think that a guy like Jeter, maybe even a guy like Rivera, Mariano Rivera, I mean, they've just had so much just tremendous success, and they've lived such, you know, decent, proper lives that they're almost not really too interesting to read about. You know, they've just lived such perfect, pristine lives. So what I'm looking for are, you know, like with a Steve Blass, I mean, this guy was in the prime of his career, 30 years old, all-star pitcher, World Series hero, and in the prime of his career, you know, he lost the ability to throw the ball down the middle. And when he did, he got clobbered after being, you know, a star pitcher for many years. And they even named a disease after him, Steve Blass disease, which is given to guys like Mark Wohlers and Rick Ankiel, guys that have similar issues throwing the ball down the middle. So those are the stories that I like. And with Glenn Burke, he was the first major leaguer to reveal his homosexuality back in the late 70s, well, with the Dodgers and then with the A's. And it cost him his baseball career. You know, society wasn't as accepting of homosexuals as they are now. And so these stories clearly are not your run-in-the-mill baseball stories. They transcend it.
But my question is, how did they come to you? Did you go to them? Who approached who? Did Steve Blass come to you and say, I'd like you to help me do my story? Or did Glenn Burke, the same thing?
Well, Glenn Burke was dying of AIDS, and I was vaguely familiar with his story right after his career ended in 1980. He went public with it on the Today Show, and then in a Sport magazine article, Inside Sports article. So I was vaguely familiar with that. I approached Glenn Burke, as did 17 other writers and 4 movie companies, and he liked my book proposal the best. With Steve Blass, I approached him at the urging of his 2 broadcasting partners who were familiar with my Glenn Burke book, and they felt that Steve Blass, who had never done an autobiography because it was just too painful for him, and he really loved the game, and the way that he exited the game was very painful for him. So that took at least a couple of months of convincing, but that book did really well. I think everyone in Pittsburgh has a copy of that.
Now, compare that, a single person, single subject book, to doing something like Kings of Queens. The process obviously is very different.
Oh, it's very different. In the sense that, you know, I mean, Kings of Queens, of the 4 books that I've worked on, it's the first one that was all on my own. So I think the biggest difference, and I mean, you're a fellow author, you know, it's, you know, you don't have to run every chapter by the person that you're co-authoring the book with. You're on your own. So that, as an author, is a huge difference. I mean, I remember with Steve Blass, I would write the chapters, and then, I mean, we would go through what I wrote for a good 3 or 4 hours. You know, it's a lot of extra work. So by writing your own book, I mean, you can pretty much dictate the content and what you want in there and what you don't.
Now we're talking with Eric Sherman, author of the new book, Kings of Queens, Life Beyond Baseball with the 86 Mets. Now, one of the interesting things I found about this is that you are not a professional journalist by trade.
No, I've been writing professionally since I was 14 years old. I began writing for a local North New Jersey newspaper called The Community Life, and I wrote primarily on high school sports and got paid for it from the time I was 14, but I have not, you know, I'm not affiliated with any newspapers now, any dailies. So I just focus on writing books, which I've written for.
Now, your first book was self-published, and that is, self-publishing has come a long way. So this is like earlier on, and I wonder what kind of support you had when you did that, as opposed to now when I read a lot of self-published stuff, and then to be very honest, you know, it's not well edited. There are a lot of mistakes to get through. It's hard to find someone to sit down and take the time to go over with you to help you with these things. So, what was that experience like self-publishing your first book?
Well, it's an experience I'll never do again. you know, this was back in 1995. So it was before Amazon. It was before, you know, you had all these independent publishers that would help self-publishing. I mean, there was one. It was Bertelsmann that I used. And it's a terrible process because, you know, you have to find someone to do all your own editing, fact-checking, and then you have to promote it on your own. And back then, you know, there, I mean, we didn't have the internet then, so it was very hard. Like you had to mail out books. You know, you would do book signings, but you'd have to publicize it. You'd have to put ads in mediums like Baseball Weekly on your own, and so it's expensive. It's a lot of time, but thankfully, many years later, now 5 years ago, I got a call from Jamie Lee Curtis, the actress, and she was interested in doing a film based on the book that I self-published. And that really got things going again. Comcast did a documentary on Glenn Burke, which I was a part of. So there's actually going to be a movie made based on Out at Home, the Glenn Burke story.
A feature film, not a documentary.
Correct. Yeah. Once Penguin Berkeley got wind of that, they became interested in republishing it, which they did.
And Berkeley is a publisher of your Kings of Queens and the Mookie book.
Yep.
And your Steve Glass book was published by Triumph, so they do a lot of sports things as opposed to Berkeley, which I would guess would be more of an all-purpose publisher. What was it like working with Triumph?
A very professional outlet. They do sports books as well as anyone, I think. They kept Steve very, very busy. They scheduled probably 40 interviews for him. So they kept him on the run. They're very, very good at publicizing their books and getting the word out and promoting it. I was very proud of that book in many ways. And I think the success of the Steve Blass book helped lead me on the path to doing Mookie's book. And Mookie's book, of course, helped lead me to doing Kings of Queens. So it was a very good experience with Triumph. And they put out a very good product with the focus being in sports.
Your work with Mookie, where you work with all the three gentlemen, you call Mookie a friend. Does it ever get to a point where you say, they'll tell you something and say, gee, I don't know if you should put this in the book or maybe you want to rephrase that? You know, the line between sitting there and listening to them and taking notes or however the what is your process? Are you sitting face-to-face with them? Do they record their thoughts and send it to you? Is it some other way? How do you work?
Well, it's always with, you know, every interview is taped. Everything that's discussed, I mean, even down to when someone's leaving the room. It's all recorded. It's all transcribed. I do most of my own transcribing. In Mookie's case, he preferred us to meet face-to-face. And, I mean, he had tremendous energy. We would go, I kid you not, Ron, we would go 8 to 9 hours straight without, you know, getting lunch or dinner. He just had, he just enjoyed the process so much. Mookie, I should add, also came to me with 100 pages of the manuscript that he had already worked on. So that was a big help, and that was a big difference from the other guys. But with Steve Blass, we did the interviews primarily over the phone. And I think that's because, you know, Steve lives in Pittsburgh, and, you know, it was just much easier to do it over the phone. Whereas with Mookie, as a Mets team ambassador, he's up in New York, you know, once a month. And with Glenn Burke, of course, I did it in person. He really was in the final months of his life and was bedridden. So I conducted that interview. He was living with his sister at the time. So it's but as far as what goes in and what doesn't go in, in an autobiography, that's discussed. And in a book like Kings of Queens, you know, I basically, unless they told me something's off the record, you know, I'll probably put it in.
One of the things that you write in Kings and Queens in your chapter about Mookie is there's a point where SNY, who broadcast the Met games, brought in Keith Hernandez to comment on the book when it came out as far as the mentions of the partying and substance abuse and whatnot. And Mookie acknowledged that it was pretty much common knowledge.
Right.
Now, just about every book about the 86 Mets refers to the drug use and the partying and whatnot. You know, Gooden talks about it in his memoir. Strawberry talks about it in his books. And that's part of, I don't know if it's a New York thing or just a general, you know, people love this kind of stuff. Ron Darling was recently interviewed on the Leonard Lopate show. And I give kudos to Lopate for waiting until almost two-thirds of the way into the interview before asking him about that. And Darling says, well, this is what sells. So there's that kind of awareness that, yeah, you want to tell your story, but you also want to sell the story. You want to sell the book.
Well, in the Mookie chapter where he alludes to SNY bringing in Keith Hernandez, that was to address not drug use, but it was to address the relationship that Gary Carter...
Oh, apologies for that.
No, that's okay. And Gary Carter, what was common knowledge, well, in a lot of circles anyway, was that Gary resented the fact that Keith Hernandez was named captain of the Mets and not him. Now, they named Carter co-captain the following season. So they named Keith Hernandez captain in 87, and then they made Gary the co-captain in 88. And so basically, you know, Carter told some reporters, you know, I don't know why they did that. You know, Keith, with his drug past, he's not fit to be captain. It should have been me, that type of thing. And so that was in Mookie's book, and that is what SNY just was all over. Now, you do bring up a good point, though, with you know, the drug use by guys like Strawberry and Gooden. And that... In my book, Kings of Queens, we go a lot deeper, and we go into the reasons why they started using. You know, with Daryl Strawberry, he talks a great deal about the adversarial relationship that he had with his father. It was very abusive. And, you know, he was always told that, you know, he should do better than he did. And so once he got to the majors, you know, he'd hit 25 home runs and people would say he should hit 35. And then the one year he hit 39, they said he should hit 50. And so, you know, I asked him how he handled all that, and he said, oh, I didn't. You know, I drank and chased women and did some other things. And you know, we go a lot deeper into it. And I should note that the Gary Carter relationship with the 86 Mets really evolved in a positive way over the years, to the point where a lot of these guys said to me that by the time Carter was in his final days before he succumbed to brain cancer, that they really admired him and wished that they had lived their lives more like him.
And I want to wrap this up with a little word association. So I'll give you a little intro, I guess, and you're telling me the player who you feel fits it best. So among the players that you interviewed for Kings of Queens, who would you say was the most misunderstood?
Wally Backman.
Okay, who was the best interview from just these people in the book?
Doug Sisk.
Who surprised you the most, if that's not the same thing as best interview, but who was most surprising to you in the way he carried himself and the way he revealed himself? Who was most surprising to you personally?
Daryl Strawberry.
Who do you think would be most surprising for readers?
Most surprising for readers? Kevin Mitchell.
Who is someone you would like to spend more time with?
Kevin Mitchell.
And finally, who is someone whose story you'd like to work on as a full book?
Oh, as a full book?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Keith Hernandez. And I know that he's coming out with his memoir, but I think if he puts it all out there, that'll be fascinating.
That was something that when I heard he was coming out with a book, I figured another book, because a lot of these guys came out with books immediately after the 86 year. Dave Johnson, who did the forward for your book, came out with a book of his own. Keith came out with a book. Dykstra came out with a book. I'm sure that Strawberry and Gooden came out with books around that time. So mm-hmm. It was like strike while the iron's hot. So,
yep.
So again, we've been talking with Eric Sherman, author of Kings of Queens, Life Beyond Baseball with the 86 Mets. Eric, thanks very much for talking with us today.
Well, it was a pleasure, Ron. Thanks for having me.
And that was our bookshelf conversation with Eric Sherman, a little longer than usual, but well worth it, I'm sure you'll agree. Come back again next time when we'll have another fascinating guest from the world of baseball pop culture. In the meantime, visit Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf regularly for the latest news, reviews, previews, and interviews on baseball music, books, etc., etc. Remember, if you have any questions or issues or concerns, please send me a note to ronkaplansbaseballbookshelf@gmail.com. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you next time.
I'm glad I discovered this land. Tea is a wonder.